Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, our last regular Three Martini Lunch of 2014, but fear not, our exciting series of six different episodes of special year-end awards kicks off Wednesday, Christmas Eve. It'll run all the way through January 2nd, culminating with our Person of the Year. And Jim, our good martini today is good news for everybody. We don't even have to couch it in terms of conservative versus liberal. The economy is doing better. The U.S. economy soaring by 5%. Gross domestic product grew by 5% in the third quarter, the most rapid pace since the same period of 2003. The news sent the Dow over 18,000 at a time when we're already seeing lower gas prices and other indicators suggesting that we're finally maybe creeping past this bouncing along the bottom ever since the Great Recession started. Some pretty optimistic news heading into the new year.
It is, and this is an American people that deserves it, that needs it, that has had it coming for a really long time. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, the first quarter, that the economy had contracted by about 2.1%. Two interesting numbers that jumped out of today's figures. One is that the spending for consumption went up 3.2%, which is the biggest jump since the end of last year, which is a pretty decent number. That's the sort of thing where people are buying more. It's generally helpful for the economy. I think also as this time goes by, the unemployment number is below 6%, and the administration has always been touting that, and a lot of folks have kind of grumbled and said, yes, technically, but it's mostly because of the shrinking workforce participation rate. I think as we talk about whether the economy is doing well, I think we have shifted from the discussion of whether people have jobs, which is an important discussion, and I think it's if you don't have a job, you don't have any money coming in, and things are going to be real tough, to two other figures. One is how many hours there were. For a while, there was that big burst in part-time work, and whether the question is whether people were working full-time and making 40-hour-a-week pay period. And then the other one is wage growth. And I think that's the next number to really keep an eye on. I think that there's been really stagnant wages for a long time. Even I think you can go back to the Bush years and said that the growth in wages was generally being eaten up by health insurance and health care premiums. So even during what we thought was a better economic period than what we've seen during the Obama years, people didn't feel like they were getting ahead. That the last really good time in American economy felt like the dot-com boom of the late 1990s. Maybe we're turning a corner here. Kind of remains to be seen, but look, we've had, it's been down so long, to see genuinely good news is really a refreshing change of pace around here.
And Jim, we said it was a good news regardless of your politics, but people are going to take credit for this, so who deserves the credit?
I'm going to credit the American people. actually, what kind of an interesting measuring stick that I'm wondering about, Greg, is declining oil prices. When oil prices go up, gasoline prices go up, and everything that gets shipped to end up on your store shelves ends up costing more because of increased transportation costs. If we are going to be in for a period of sustained declining oil prices, that's really good news for the American consumer, freeing up more dollars to be spent on other things and, more discretionary income.
On to the bad martini now, and a space that's usually reserved for the Middle East has been occupied a lot in the last several days by this whole debacle with Sony and the hackers and North Korea and this movie called The Interview. And the latest twist in this story, as reported by the Washington Post, is that several major and independent theaters pleaded with Sony Pictures Entertainment to consider limited distribution of the film, but were rejected by the movie studio. According to a source familiar with the talks, in private calls with Sony Pictures Entertainment executives last week, theater owners suggested the movie studio release the film in smaller batches in order to assess the credibility of threats made by hacker group Guardians of Peace. But the discussions were kept private. Obviously, Sony deciding not to go in that direction because liability is liability, Jim. And if only they had talked to the president.
You know, Greg, I know it will stun you to hear the idea that there's dishonesty in Hollywood. I'll give listeners a moment to brace themselves to come to terms with that. This story keeps finding new ways to be depressing. By the way, in separate news, Greg, people had noted there was a outage of the internet in North Korea yesterday. My understanding is that both computers in the country could not reach the internet. A lot of people, I think, were now out of curiosity, kind of wanted to see this movie and to see what had North Korea so riled up about this. It did appear that they appeared to have surrendered in the face of threats and backed down and were willing to let North Korea effectively censor them. And then the excuse that came from Sony Pictures Entertainment was, look, you know, it's not our fault. It's the movie theaters. They weren't willing to show the film. Well, according to this report, the movie theaters were, but obviously they had anxiety about the threat. So their attitude was, let's do a limited release and let's see what happens. And I guess the thinking being that if nobody had attacked the movie theaters then, they'd open it up for full release. This really suggests that Sony really was shaken to the core by this release of sensitive information and their personal emails and other embarrassing email messages and stuff like that. And they were so terrified by it that they were looking for any excuse. But the interesting thing is that they weren't willing to admit that they were terrified because of the release of more embarrassing information, decided to use the theater owners as a scapegoat, and the movie theater chains apparently are not willing to take that anymore. So it just makes everybody look unwilling to stand up for principle, unwilling to stand up for this film, willing to back down, and also then willing to finger point to everybody else. And for Obama to do his line from yesterday, well, if only they talked to me, I could work that out. Now looks even more like this doesn't call for second guessing, Mr. President. Maybe you need to step in and do a White House showing or something like that. You need to do some sort of action to show that we're not going to be bullied by this, because I don't know if the hack attack against North Korea really was an effective enough deterrent.
All right, on to the crazy martini now, and we head back to the rift between the New York Police Department and Mayor Bill de Blasio. The mayor holding a press conference along with the police commissioner yesterday in part to update the investigation on the murder of the two police officers on Saturday, as well as addressing to some extent the controversy. De Blasio, of course, making sure that he says that, of course, we've never incited protesters to do anything violent. The people who are chanting kill the cops are the ones who are in the distinct minority that just happen to be the loudest. And then a reporter asked whether he'd be okay with his son, who is black, saying that. He says, absolutely not. And then he decided to blame the media. They're the ones, Jim, really responsible for the division going on here. Here's what he said.
We've talked about this so many times, I'm going to talk about it again. And now the question is, what are you guys going to do? What are you guys going to do? Are you going to keep dividing us? I'm not talking about every single one of you. I am telling you over again, that's how you want to portray the world, but we know a different reality. People do that. It's wrong. It's wrong. They shouldn't do that. It's immoral. It's wrong. It's nasty. It's negative. They should not do that. But they, my friend, are not the majority. Stop portraying them as the majority.
Jim, it would be easy to chalk this up as talking points if it wasn't so blatantly obvious that the police have just a visceral animosity towards this man for the way he's treated them over the past year.
I did not have high hopes for de Blasio as mayor, but he's really gone downhill a lot faster than I think anyone expected. And here's the thing. You know, when you're mayor of New York City, you're going to have difficult challenges thrown at you. Ask Bloomberg, ask Rudy, ask Dinkins, ask Ed Koch. Circumstances of a white cops doing something that is perceived as provocative or unjustified by the black community is not something new to New York City. And when that happens, they've got to walk a tightrope. In fact, there's a good, pretty decent Al Pacino movie about him playing the mayor, having to go to a black church in Harlem and kind of quell the anger in the crowd. This is what happened. But de Blasio was the first one to play the, hey, I have a black son. I know exactly what you guys are going through. And I am fed up with these cops too card. That he didn't stand up with the cops. And he didn't say that this was, he didn't appeal for calm. And he was, he gave this completely self-absorbed speech about how he's had to have this talk with his son and all that. And it really was the most arrogant and politically exploitative move possible in very bad circumstances. And I think that's one of the things that those of us who are outside circumstances like this will look at the likes of Al Sharpton and say, look, if my child had been killed by a cop, I'd be furious. And if my neighbor's child had been killed by a cop, I'd be furious too. The anger there is palpable and real, and in some cases justifiable and understanding. But what happens is the Sharptons of the world go in and they make the situation worse. They pour gasoline on the fire, and Sharpton, going all the way back to Freddie's Fashion Mart, has made a career out of this, of taking bad situations and making them worse, making people angrier, making people more stirring the desire to lash out. And in light of this, I mean, when hearing that somebody had taken shots at two cops, we may be shocked and appalled by it, but we're not really surprised that there's been so much free-floating anger out there and so much demonization of the cops. It's not that surprising that somebody would say, you know, I don't like cops to begin with. I'm going to lash out at them. I'm going to get them. And this will make me a hero because people are so mad at the cops. And the cops know this. The cops know, and the cops feel like de Blasio doesn't have their back on this situation, that he's willing to throw them under the bus, so to speak, if he thinks it can benefit him politically. Well, here he is, and now all of a sudden that the worst, you know, has happened, and you know, we're just sitting holding our breath, hoping nothing similar happens the next couple of days, that you end up with a situation in which all of a sudden now he's got to come out and try to say, oh no, I was with the cops all along, and then turn around and also kind of say, hey, oh, by the way, we need a timeout. We need to stop protesting until after the funerals for these cops who have been slain. And unsurprisingly, the groups that are protesting are saying they're not going to stop the demonstrations. You know, it's rather interesting. You know, I'm surprised he made the move because, one, I'm surprised at the arrogance he thought that they would listen to him. Because if they did listen to him, that means that he controls them. And the last thing they want to do is appear that they are tools of the mayor and that they answer to him, that he's their boss. So he just seems to be completely in over his head, and he's got 3 years left in his mayoral term. And it's just kind of interesting. How long can you be mayor of New York City if the cops don't trust you and you've allied yourself with a protest movement that clearly doesn't listen to you and doesn't, you know, doesn't consider your opinion very strongly at all?
That's not to say that the media hasn't played a role. We talked about it a number of times in the Bad Martini in Ferguson, where they were camped out for days waiting for that grand jury verdict, and as soon as it came down, they had their cameras all poised, ready for the violence that sadly did come. But in this particular situation, to claim that
idea that, you know, basically he's blaming them for a circumstance that his own speeches and his own actions certainly facilitated the anger a lot more than any particular media coverage. Unless, say, he wanted to blame MSNBC for giving Al Sharpton a show an hour every day. And I don't think that's who he had in mind.
Probably.
It'd be kind of fun for him to name names, wouldn't it, be Greg?
That would be an interesting twist for sure. Jim, have a wonderful Christmas, and I will officially see you tomorrow for our first year-end award show.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See you tomorrow.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And again, tune in starting on Wednesday for the first of our year-end award editions of the 3 Martini Lunch.